Hi, everybody. Today is Wednesday, June 11th, 2025, and our friend Leith Maruf from Beirut is back with us. Welcome back, Leith.
Great to be with you, Nima.
Leith, I want to start with the situation, with the negotiation, with the talks between the United States and Israel on one part and Hamas on the other part. Here is what Donald Trump said about the situation there.
Tilla, do you have a response at all about Israel intercepting this boat? And can you give us an update on what's happening to the entry of aid into Gaza right now? We've had people being shot by Israeli forces who are trying to get
Gaza's
aid from
right
the Gaza
now,
Humanitarian Foundation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gaza right now is in the midst of a massive negotiation between us and Hamas and Israel, and Iran actually is involved. And we'll see what's going to happen with Gaza. We want to get the hostages back. That's all I can tell you. Yeah, please.
What we've learned from the media in the United States, they're talking about that in the phone call that Donald Trump talked with Netanyahu, we talk about that there has to be an end to the conflict in Gaza. And we know that they're somehow trapping people with this aid and they're killing people. And Cradle reported just moments ago that 9 Palestinians killed near aid center in southern Gaza. Go ahead, your take on that, Dave.
Well, obviously the number of people that have been massacred in this genocide is probably over 200,000. You know, we heard multiple times Trump repeat the number 1.7, 1.9. And we have a study by Oxford University that just came out that had access to Israeli military numbers. And that's what they're saying is there's 1.8 million left. So minimum is 200,000 people have been killed over the last 19 months. And this is not stopping. Because the Palestinians have not surrendered. The Palestinian people are still resisting. The Zionist colony has no military strategy to defeat the Palestinian resistance. So it has, you know, chosen to continue with this genocide. And this genocide will continue. There's nothing that's going to stop it except military intervention and or the total collapse of Western support to the colony. And we are getting closer and closer to that moment. I think Trump talking about how Iran is involved in this negotiation, this is the first time we hear this. Obviously, for the last 19 months, it's been the two vassal states, Qatar and Egypt, pretending to be negotiating on behalf of the Palestinians. And that road, it seems to have reached its end. That whole theatrics doesn't have a meaning anymore. And there's no food being delivered by either of these countries that's supposed to be, you know, helping the Palestinians in Gaza. Clearly, they're not. So what is the admittance of Trump that Iran is involved in this negotiations also signals to us that the axis of resistance is alive and well, that the Palestinian resistance trusts Iran to negotiate, and the battle of the Palestinian people against the Zionist colonists is one battle of all the Arab and Muslim people in the region against Western colonialism. And the fate and the future of Iran is intertwined with the fate and future of the Palestinian people. Iran and the Iranian people are supporting the Palestinians from a principled position of standing for justice and the oppressed, but also this is a survival issue for Iran. If there is no Palestinian resistance, if there is no Lebanese resistance, if there is no Yemeni resistance, Iran will be left alone and it will be bombarded by the West long time ago. So this is why it's clear now that all the theatrics that we saw for 18 months, 19 months are now reached there, the end of the road. And we are at a crucial moment. on the ground in terms of the rollout of this genocide, how fast it's going to be accelerating now that people have been starving for months. And there's, you know, even the World Health Organization is saying over the last few weeks, 5,000 miscarriages of pregnant women in Gaza. That means like we're reaching a point of extension of a whole generation that's not going to be born. Okay, people are not even calculating what this will mean for the Palestinians 30 years from now if there's a missing whole generation of children. This is going to go on like this. And we see how it's affecting, finally, it's starting to affect the streets and the stability of Western states in general, where the majority of the population is against this genocide. And they don't see that there's any democratic path to have their governments deliver on their democratic will of peoples in the West. And an explosion, as we see in the streets of the U.S., we can connect it somehow if you want to the genocide in Gaza. But in general, this is the mood in the West. There is a moment of a pressure cooker where the populations have waited to see a response to the nonviolent demands of the population by the states, and the governments are refusing to give any democratic path to end this genocide. So we will be seeing more and more unrest, more and more militant confrontation with the states, as we saw with those killing of the Israeli embassy workers in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago, and then the firebombing of those Zionists demonstrating in Colorado.
You're talking about what's going on in Los Angeles and with the situation that they're having. We know that Donald Trump is trying to manage the situation in Los Angeles. He has the differences between him and the government of California, Gavin Newsom. How is that related to what you're talking about?
You see, the Zionists don't only have an interest in destroying the Arabic and Muslim world and any resistance to them there. They don't only have an interest to genocide the Palestinians. They also have an interest in limiting the integration of Arabic and Muslim people and anybody who is in their support, the integration of those communities in Western societies. Over the last 30 years, the size of the Arabic and Muslim population increased in these Western countries. And through natural process of living with people, going to school with them, going to university, intermarrying with them, the opinions and the humanization of Muslims and Arabs have saturated the Western society. And therefore, the Zionists over the last couple of decades were having a race with the integration of the Arabic and Muslim communities to try to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so all the waves that we saw of, you know, the Patriot Act, September 11 itself was organized by the Saudis and the Al-Wahhabi despots and Al-Qaeda on behalf of the Zionists to slow down the integration of the Arabic and Muslim communities. All the rise of the fascist in Europe, the rise of Trump, the rise of ultra-right all across Europe, that was financed and giving propaganda spaces and media space by the Zionists in the West. And so the racial war that we're seeing right now in the streets of the United States was instigated by the Zionists. They want to return the United States to being a fascist white supremacist state in order to make sure that the humanization of Arabs and Muslims doesn't happen. The integration of those communities and anybody that looks like us, brown, Mexicans, black people, anyone who is left and progressive and humanist, all of those people are being isolated on purpose by the Zionists, and Trump is delivering on that. So this is integrally, linked to the genocide in Gaza. It may not look for a lot of people that don't understand why did we reach this point of anti-immigration levels in the West, when just 15 years ago the West was talking about it, you know, caring for minorities and all of those things, and multiculturalism. We're now at the extreme. That didn't happen out of a vacuum. It happened with the Zionists, who control the media, who instigated all this hate, and it is with their financing that we saw the rise of these fascists into power across the West.
Leith, coming back to the situation in Gaza, and we know that in southern Lebanon we have the same issue, that Israelis are attacking. Many people are asking me to the question that what's going on with Hezbollah? What is happening in Lebanon that we cannot hear anything from Hezbollah?
Yeah, Hezbollah is purposefully staying under the radar. As far as I can tell from, you know, speaking to people here, the whole party is convinced that we are going to be back into full war, and it will be the Zionists that are triggering it, and they are preparing for that. So all of the smaller battles that Hezbollah could have been dealing with, whether it's on the ground against the enemy or politically inside the country, it seems like they have no care for them right now, and they are rushing as fast as possible to rearm and reorganize in a manner that will be sufficient to deter the future war. And they have multiple scenarios that they laid out that could happen. And of course, the worst case scenario is a coordinated attack from HTS and the Zionists from the north and the south. That's why we see even Hezbollah right now and its media not antagonizing HTS and al-Julani in Damascus, because in fact, we know that the vast majority of oil and gas that is reaching now Syria, the areas that are under control of HTS, because Syrian oil and gas is being looted and by the Turks and the Americans and sent to Israel, the vast majority of the oil and gas that we see in the market in Syria right now is coming from Lebanon, smuggled by Hezbollah, handed over to HTS. And on the other side, we see actually HTS in return allowing the flow of weapons to Hezbollah. This may sound very crazy to some people. It may sound like this is just a dream or imagination, but we are seeing, you know, hundreds of trucks coming in with weapons into Lebanon through the knowledge of HTS, with every once in a while one truck being exhibited by HTS as caught by, you know, to pretend that they are. And it's basically part of the bill that they have agreed to, that HTS will pretend that it's capturing one truck every couple of weeks. And the flow of refugees from Syria is unbelievable. I have been visiting specifically the north part of Lebanon and watching as people cross the natural border, the river that defines the border between Lebanon and Syria. On average, there's at least 3,000 Syrians crossing illegally every day from the north only. So pretty soon, practically all the Shia and Sunnis and Alawis in Syria, and maybe even the Christians, will end up in Lebanon. The Lebanese government is claiming that there's around 2 million Syrians in Lebanon, before this war and the collapse of the Syrian government. So you could imagine, I personally think that that number is now close to 4 million. There's no way I can walk in the street anywhere in the smallest village in the south in Lebanon that I don't find hundreds of Syrians. Okay, so this is again, you know, Hezbollah is allowing this, the HDS is allowing this, and this is actually bolstering the power of Hezbollah. If a situation happens where now there's an attack by the Israelis and or a combined with the you know, fascist Christian supremacists of the Falange here in Lebanon, there's now millions of Syrians that are Shia and Alawi that are inside Lebanon that will carry arm on the side of Hezbollah. So these are all being played out as scenarios in whatever strategist rooms in Hezbollah.
Leith, do you feel that the government in Lebanon is somehow walking toward Mahmoud Abbas position, or they're different, they're going to be different than what we've been witnessing with the case of Mahmoud Abbas and the West Bank?
Yeah, I mean, Mahmoud Abbas is a model that you can't top really on this planet. There's no more, there's nobody who's more treacherous to their own people than Mahmoud Abbas on this whole planet. So it's really hard to compete with Mahmoud Abbas. If you want to be a traitor to your people. And look, I think there's many stresses in Lebanon that will not allow a leader to reach that level of treachery. And that's because of the various sects and parties and the history of Lebanon. It's not the same as having a dictator for the last 20 what years since he was last elected, speaking to himself and his masters only. Now, having said that, you know, yesterday we were in the south filming, and there was a troops of the UNIFIL that entered a private land without the presence of the Lebanese military. And the locals, the owners of the land, confronted the UNIFIL force. They were filming this. And the UNIFIL force started pushing people. And one of those Lebanese landowners just slapped the UNIFIL guy so hard on his face, his head almost twisted, okay? And that, you know, went all around the country. And it led to two things. One is a statement by the prime minister and the president, both of them condemning the Lebanese who did this, the Lebanese citizen who slapped the UNIFIL soldiers. And both of those statements didn't mention the fact that the UNIFIL was breaching its own agreement and its own, the United Nations resolution by entering private lands without the presence of the Lebanese military. The other thing that it led to was one of the Lebanese commanders in the south sent a platoon to the village where this happened, and were looking for the Lebanese citizen that slapped the UNIFIL guy and wanted to arrest him. And the that led to kind of a scuffle with the Lebanese military, and some of the soldiers, and this was all caught on camera again, pulled their machine guns and aimed them at the civilians that are unarmed. And so, you know, number one is that citizen is hiding now. Nobody knows where he is. Nobody's going to hand him over to a stupid decision by the government, who cannot even protect its own sovereignty or force the UNIFIL to do something or defend the land against the Zionist attacks, but is willing to pull their guns on Lebanese soldiers, which is in itself a violation of Lebanese law. You cannot, as a soldier, pull your arms on a citizen that is unarmed. So, you know, this shows you clearly the limitations of how much treachery and treason a president and a prime minister of Lebanon, even if they're appointed by the American embassy, can do. And inside the Lebanese military since yesterday, because of the attempt to arrest this citizen and the confrontation with the villagers, there is right now a huge battle happening. The head of the Lebanese army is actually a patriot. He's Christian, but he's a patriot. He supports the resistance. And now there's a problem between the leadership of the military and this general on the ground, the commander on the ground that ordered the attempted arrest of the citizen. And you see, so, you know, none of those actors that the United States would want to depend on can deliver them anything that Mahmoud Abbas has been delivering in the West Bank.
And Mahmoud Abbas sent a letter to French President Emmanuel Macron asking and just declaring that Hamas needs to be disarmed. And I would wonder if any of them, Emmanuel Macron and Mahmoud Abbas, has any sort of importance for the Palestinian people.
Yeah, Mahmoud Abbas has no support at all anywhere. I personally have not met anyone that supports Mahmoud Abbas. They have to be taking money directly from him to do that. Even in Fatah itself, I mean, when I meet people here in Lebanon that are Palestinian in the camps and they are members of Fatah, they always differentiate between Mahmoud Abbas and his clique and the actual leadership of Fatah and the structures of Fatah and their armed wing. And so, you know, I think the only reason that we haven't seen anyone put a bullet in the head of Mahmoud Abbas yet is because people are worried about the unknown, okay? You know, it's almost like the poison that you know is better than the poison you don't. Okay, so because we've seen over the last 20 years in the Arabic world, every attempt to make change only makes things worse, right? And so you have that feeling. People want to confront the Palestinian Authority and the security forces of Palestinian Authority, but they don't want to take it to a point of civil war. You know, although I personally think it's already a civil war, the PA and its security forces are killing people all the time in the West Bank. I think it's over 70 Palestinians have been killed by the Palestinian Authority security forces since the beginning of the Holocaust in Gaza. So, but, you know, I'm not a political leader. I'm not a leader of a military faction. So I don't know what's their calculations. Now, Macron, I mean, we call him Macaroni here. You know, in Lebanon, which France has more influence over because of his history of the colonizer occupier, they make that joke. And there is no effect for France. France is just a vassal like Saudi that takes orders from the White House. It's allowed, just like the Saudis, to say a few words in support of the Palestinians just to stay looking like they are sovereign. And even this statement that was signed by Macron and Starmer and Carney of Canada and so forth, putting sanctions on Ben-Gvir and Smoltrich, is all theatrics. I mean, you can't put sanctions on ministers that are part of a government and not put the sanctions on the whole government. The government is the one that's taking the decisions, is voting to support the genocide and is voting to support the continued colonization of the West Bank. It's not Smoltrich and Ben-Gvir by themselves. So all of this is theatrics, and honestly, nobody gives a damn anymore about the opinions of Western leaders and that of Abbas, that's for sure.
Leif, if they go with the plan, we know that Israelis wants to capture all of the West Bank. If they go with that plan, I would wonder how is that going to influence the position of Mahmoud Abbas, even among those people who still believe in him and somehow trust him?
Yeah, they have been rampaging the settlers, the colonists, in the West Bank over the last few days, more than usual even. There's a couple of villages in the Jordan River Valley that have been completely ethnically cleansed. Those villages, you know, are very, very isolated from the rest of the West Bank. There's, you know, no roads to them that don't go through colonies. And similarly, we saw over the last few days attacks on multiple villages in the Nablus region, you know, setting the crops on fire, the homes, the cars. And this is continuing. It's accelerating. And the colonists in the West Bank are, you know, believe now that they have the right to kill at will, as they have in Gaza. And since their, you know, brethren in killing Palestinians in Gaza are not being punished for that and can get away with it, they believe the same. We saw yesterday two brothers in Old Nablus city, civilians, unarmed, being assassinated in cold blood in front of all the cameras while their hands are up. So this is just becoming the norm. Mahmoud Abbas will stay in Ramallah until his masters say leave. And I have a feeling that he's going to die before. And I'm most probably of old age. The guy is like in his mid-80s. And his sons are already outside the country. One of his sons live in Montreal in Canada. There's hundreds of millions of dollars already stolen. And so if people want to, you know, in Canada do something, they can go and, you know, confront this man, this thief that is living amongst them. And his other son is in Paris. So that tells you a little bit about why Macron spoke in such ways. And again, they have hundreds of millions of dollars, this other son in Paris. So it's a corrupt family. It already took all the money that it can. And the man is going to just keep on staying in the seat until he dies and or his masters tell him leave.
Leith, we can not ignore the changes that are happening in the mainstream media and the way. Look at Piers Morgan, you look at the people who were supporting Israel in their genocide in Gaza. Right now, it seems that the rhetoric on their part is somehow changing. It's not because of the reality of what's going on in Gaza. It's because of the public opinion I consider the public opinion somehow is putting a lot of pressure on the mainstream media that they're not reporting honestly on what's going on in Gaza. That's why they're changing their tone. What's your take on that and the way that they're trying to somehow put in a little bit of pressure on Israel and Netanyahu?
Look, I think the actual reason we see the change in the media and in those statements that we talked about of Starmer and Macron and so on about Ben-Gvir and Smotrich is not about the pressure of public opinion. It's about the fear of somebody picking up arms and taking it out on the elite in the West. We already saw those. So those two incidents of the DC attack on the embassy's staff and or the Colorado attack on the Zionist demonstration, those happened before any change we saw. Okay. And so those two attacks that are kind of like lone wolf, these are people that are not organized in any party or belong to any movement. They just decided by themselves, I'm going to do something. Those were, you know, rang alarm bells all across the West, and more so in countries with high percentage of Arabs and Muslims. Remember, the United States has had a quota for the last 100 years on how many Arabs and Muslims can immigrate It's an undeclared quota. This is why it's the only, out of all Western countries, it has the lowest percentage of Arabic and Muslim peoples. Just across the border from it in Canada, you know, the Arabic and Muslim population are huge. The Muslim religion is the second religion of the country. In France, it's one third of the population is Muslim or Arab. So if we saw a Latino Christian man pick up a gun and take out two embassy workers in Washington, D.C., the authorities in France must be really scared what's going to happen if this continues, if the government continues to openly support the genocide. So what we saw here right now is an attempt to absorb the anger and fool the public again, thinking, to make them think that their continued nonviolent, you know, pressure on the government and the media will lead to some change. See? So I believe what Piers Morgan is doing, what these statements of these governments are, or the changes in the media attack is all just to absorb, to allow the genocide to continue more. So, because I remember I was reading all these posts by people after those two things happened, the attacks and the change in tack. And then you see all these thought leaders saying, hey, you don't have to be so radical. Look, it's already affecting. Let's continue with this nonviolent way, you see? So let's not get fooled. There will be no end to this genocide if the West is not forced to end it. And the only two things that are going to force it to end is internal turmoil in the West and or military defeat for the Zionist colony on the ground.
Nate, Israelis and the Israeli ambassador to the United Kingdom and officials from the Israeli government appeared on the mainstream media in the West declaring that they've killed 20,000 Hamas fighters. Do they have any sort of information on that, or they're making everything up?
I mean, it is very probable that they did kill 20,000 Palestinian resistance fighters. I don't know if it's only Hamas. And that is because we can tell from the number of Israeli soldiers killed. 15,000 Israeli soldiers killed. That's according to the former leader of the military. There's 15,000 bereaved Israeli families. That's the words that he used, which means bereaved means like they're bereaved for somebody that died. And according to Lapid, there's around 20,000 amputees in the Israeli military. So, you know, if we want to be fair, you know, the Israelis are bombarding, mass bombardment from air, and they're killing anyone that is affiliated in any way to any resistance group, any Palestinian party, and they're calculating those dead as members of Hamas or others. So it does make some sense. There's no point of denying that, but 15,000 to 20,000 is a really good ratio for any resistance movement. 15,000 Israeli soldiers for only 20,000 Hamas fighters. Wow, that's a higher point of parity in fighting with this huge technological difference between the two sides. Now, of course, we have to even recognize that the majority of those 20,000 have died in mass air bombardments that killed hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, civilians. And so, again, we see that, in fact, the Palestinian fighter is more of a better fighter than the Israeli soldiers. That's clear because of how far the difference in technology is. And how wide the campaign of bombardments are. You're telling me you only killed 20,000 fighters in Gaza? That's that's a humiliation, actually, not something that they should be bragging about, the Zionists.
When we talk about Israel, we're talking about a country with 8-9 million people, and half of them are Palestinians, if I'm not mistaken. These sort of casualties, these sort of fights are so much devastating for the society in their eyes, and if we go to their logic, because recently two former prime ministers of Israel came out and said that what's happening in Gaza now is unacceptable. They cannot get along with the policy of Netanyahu and his administration, because in my opinion, they're seeing what's happening to the society in Israel. When it comes to the reason that they're somehow coming out and talking about these things, how the conflict in Gaza, in your opinion, has influenced Israelis and their society and the population in Israel?
Well, just to be clear about the numbers, there's around 14 million people that live between the river and the sea. Around 9 million are citizens of Israel. And that includes Palestinians that have citizenship. And so out of those 14 million that live between the river and the sea, 7 million are Palestinian and 7 million are colonists. Okay. So yes, it's 50-50 now between the river and the sea, but not inside the Zionist, whatever the state wants to call itself. Having said that, I think there's been a lot of surveys done over the last few months of the colonist population. And what we see is a hardening of fascist positionality because of how much protection the Zionists got from Western media, from the Western elite, from Western governments through protection at international courts, in public opinion, in international venues, and the never-ending supply of weapons, and the arrival of thousands upon thousands of mercenaries and fascists from all across the world that want to kill Arab and Palestinian children. Okay, so that has hardened the fascist mentality of the Zionists, and we see, one of those surveys a few days ago asked if there's too much media coverage of Palestinian suffering, and around 65 or 68% of Israelis said, yeah, we should stop allowing anybody to cover the massacres that are happening to the Palestinians. I would say all of this is also true of the Jewish community around the world. And I am, not happy about saying these things. Look, for a long time, I personally, living in Canada for 25 years and working with many anti-Zionist Jews and so on, I for a long time have differentiated between Judaism and Zionism. Okay. But now that we have a full-out genocide and in a large scale, in a short period, broadcasted Holocaust 24 hours a day on all social medias, and it's all being conducted in the name of the Jewish state, the Jewish people, and the safety of Jewish people around the world, and where the 99.9% of every Jewish organization in the West, every Jewish school, every Jewish hospital, every Jewish media, all support the genocide. And you have this 1% of anti-Zionist Jews that are, all they're doing is talking, and taking media space and going out and doing useless demonstrations against the state, the government that they are living in, and not taking any action to challenge the Zionists that control their institutions, or to create their own institutions. There's not one Jewish school in the West that doesn't teach Zionism. There's not one Jewish hospital in the West that condemned the attacks on Palestinian medical centers and you know, workers. There's not one Jewish magazine that condemned the Holocaust. Okay, so in fact, what we're seeing is, whether I like it or not myself, or whether the anti-Zionist Jews like it or not themselves, the fact is Judaism is Zionism today. And until there is some Jewish revolutionaries that are willing to take action to liberate their religion from Zionism, Judaism is a lost cause. Okay? I, as a Muslim, don't give a damn actually about what's the future of Judaism. It's not my religion. You know, we don't have to, we can't force Christians and secular and Muslim people to care, to differentiate between Judaism and Zionism if there's no Jew that is willing to die to make that differentiation, right? As a Muslim, I would have condemned Islam if there wasn't one Muslim that carried arms against the Wahhabi death squads, right? If all the Muslim religious sects all supported bin Laden, I would have abandoned Islam, okay? But the truth is, even the fact that the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Qataris and the Turks support bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, their religious institutions all condemn the Wahhabi death squads. They condemn Al-Qaeda, they condemn ISIS. There is not one Muslim organization that is officially accepted by governments that supports ISIS. But today, every official Jewish organization supports Zionism and the genocide of the Palestinian people. So at this moment, if there is any Jew that wants to stop people from conflating Judaism from Zionism, they have to take action against the Zionist. It doesn't have to be Elias Rodriguez, a Latino Christian, that confronts the Zionist. It has to be the Aaron Mattes, the Max Blumenthal's, the Dan Cohen's that get off their behind, stop making money out of the Palestinian issue, and go take action to liberate Judaism from Zionism, let alone to save the Palestinian people. You're still on mute.
Sorry. Leith, when we talk about Zionism, I think the situation is much deeper than Judaism, in my opinion. It goes to the roots of, I don't know if you had, if you look at the interview that Jeffrey Sachs did with Ilan Pappe, he mentions that the historian, Israeli historian, is talking about the Zionism and the roots of Zionism. It almost started with Christian Zionism in the United Kingdom. And look at the government right now in the United States. These people are Christian. And they're mostly Zionists. They're closer to Netanyahu than Max. You talk about Max Blumenthal. I talk with Jeffrey Sachs. These people are amazing, extraordinary in the way they're fighting this sort of idea, this sort of mindset in Israel. But we have to consider that the Zionism is beyond a religion, in my opinion. It somehow is some sort of racism. And we can say that just merging is just going toward racism, and it doesn't just it's not about Judaism, Christians, religions. It's about a mindset that is capturing these people are bearing with themselves. Look at the US government. These are not Jewish people. These mostly Christians who are mostly in favor of what Netanyahu is doing and supporting. Rubio came out and condemned the government in the European governments, the European countries, because they're trying to put pressure on Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. we have to, if we just reduce the importance of what's going on, the scale of what's going on, I think we're going to the wrong direction. You're taking that.
Look, I wrote a very long, detailed article about this specific issue. It's available on Al Mayadeen website. Just put my name, Laith Maarouf, and the title, The Battle to Liberate Language from Zionism. And of course, as a Palestinian, I know the history that Sachs was talking about. And in fact, you know, clearly, Zionism, as we see it today, has not invented anything new. It has copied exactly what Western European colonists have done for a millennia now. So everything that the Crusaders said 1,000 years ago, the Zionists today, or the Jusaders, I would like call them, have said exactly the same word to word. It's not. It doesn't even go back to, you know, British Christian colonialism in the late early 1800s, okay? Or it doesn't go back only to Napoleon, who had the idea of creating a Jewish state in Palestine when he occupied Egypt and then was defeated in Acre in Palestine, and his hordes had to go back. It goes back all the way to then. And clearly, the Jewish Europeans that we know today are converts. They're not the descendants of the original Jews. That's the Palestinians. We are the descendants of the original Jews and the original Christians and so forth. And they are still white supremacists. These Zionists, Jewish Zionists, are white supremacists in a Jewish envelope around them, or, you know, clothing. That's all it is. But they are still European white supremacists. And, you know, the Crusaders 1,000 years ago said that they are the descendants of the disciples of Jesus. Therefore, Palestine belongs to them. Just like these European Jews claim to be the descendants of Moses, and therefore Palestine belongs to them. The, they have... look at what they did in the Americas in the name of Christianity. The Pope at the time said, terra nullius, called, you know, gave a fatwa, a religious decree to allow the Portuguese and the French to genocide the indigenous people, called it an empty land, a land without a people, terra nullius, the Americas, for a people without a land, what the Zionists say. You see, there's nothing really new, and I understand Zionism is not Judaism in reality, but in fact, in action, if there is no Jewish institution, show me one, okay, that is mainstream, okay, that can say, that is fighting the Zionists. Even our brothers and sisters in Natura Carta, the Torah Jews that are anti-Zionist Orthodox, religious. They are, number one, a very small minority. Number two, they are pacifists, so they will never have a clash, armed clash with the Zionists that are abducting their religion. And the third problem with them is that they are just waiting for the Messiah to come. They believe the only reason Israel doesn't have a right to exist is the Messiah is not here yet. But when the Messiah comes, they'll be fine with ethnically cleansing the Palestinians and genociding. So that's their problem with the only religious sect within Judaism, which is still a minority, that claims that they are against the state of Israel and its genocide. Now, the rest of those people, like Sachs, like Blumenthal, like Mate, these are individuals that call themselves secular. They don't belong to any specific sect in Judaism. They don't go to the synagogue. So I don't understand how they can call themselves Jewish. And calling themselves Jewish when they don't practice Judaism and they can't point me to a specific sect that they can take their ideas of anti-Zionism as Jewish sources of it, how can they call themselves Jewish? if they call themselves Jewish and they're secular, it means they are reaffirming the blood quantum, racial-ish, manufactured fantasy of a race called Jews, that somehow the blood of Max Blumenthal or Aaron Mate is related to the blood of Moses. So there is real problems. With all the love to any Jew that says things that are against Zionism, but truly, we see ourselves as Palestinians by promoting those two groups, the secular Jews, and I don't know, it's a contradiction. We are, as a Palestinian, I'm then reaffirming this blood quantum fantasy. And or if I support the Natura Carta, I'm just delaying my ethnic cleansing. I'm supporting the delay of my genocide.
And I totally understand that the way that you're trying to picture the situation, but it's still, I do believe that the case is somehow, it's totally somehow different from what I totally understand it, because you're just so angry with the situation that is happening in Gaza. You know what's going on there. We know the how dire is the situation with the starvation, with the way that they're killing people.
Understand. One last thing I would say about this. During the Holocaust, when the Nazis were mass killing all the undesirables, not only Jews, 70,000 Germans carried arms against the Nazis. 70,000 were martyred. I call them martyrs. 70,000 Germans were martyred fighting the Nazis. It's been 100 years now that not one anti-Zionist Jew has either carried arms to fight the Zionist or died opposing the Zionist, was killed by the Zionist. We have Christian and secular Westerners, Japanese, Germans, Latinos that died, were killed, that carried arms against Zionism over the last 100 years, but not one Jew. If I was Jewish, I would be ashamed of myself. I wouldn't be able to show my face that actually Germans under Nazi rule had more honor amongst them, that they would fight to liberate themselves and liberate the people being oppressed in their name. Why does it have to be the Elias Rodriguez or the Thomas Hundels or the Greta Thunbergs that are put in the front line? Where's the Max Blumenthal's? Where's the Aaron Mattes on the front line getting shot? Where are they? They don't want to carry arms? Don't carry arms. Go like the Salt March of India when Gandhi sent hundreds of thousands of people with their arms up getting shot by the British until they left the British. Send me some of your anti-Zionist Jews to the front line in Gaza. Try to breach the wall. Die. I want to see one Jew die. One Jew die to save Palestinians. I want to see that one. When I see that one, I'll be a little bit more less judgmental. But we are in the middle of a Holocaust. And for all I care, I have no interest of the history of Judaism and the future of Judaism anymore. It takes so much space in my head as a Palestinian to know every detail. I know about the history of the Bund, the leftist communist that fought the Nazi and fought the collaborationist Zionists. I know the history of every Jewish prophet, every Jewish massacre, and everything. That's all in my head. Just so I can constantly tell people, well, Judaism is not Zionism. Judaism is not Zionism. There's this amazing history of Judaism. Well, you know what? That's not my job. Show me action. And from this day on, I personally will not be defending Judaism anymore. It is the job of the anti-Zionist Jews to take action that is louder and more concrete on the ground than the actions of the Zionists.
Yeah, again, I totally get your point, Leith. And I do believe that, as Julian Assange pointed out, that media is playing a very important role, a very important role in any sort of war that happens in any corner of this planet that we're living in. But the media and these people that you're talking about, they're trying to do their best to inform people. And that's important, in my opinion, because without having a media, because the propaganda machine, let's be honest, we are the minority, we are the little minority of the society, this media that we're using. But we can do little changes with the media. We can start with these little changes. And these people that are doing this, you mentioned Blumenthal, you mentioned Mate, I talk with Jeffrey Sachs, and these people are making huge changes in the mind of even the Jewish community, even the Christian community, within the Muslim community. We know that how much, look at the situation in the Middle East. Look at the Muslims in the Middle East. Do they really care about what's going on? Do you think that the leaders in Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, we have the same? You criticize the Jewish community, you can criticize them, but we have the same sort of problem within the Muslim community. Look at what has happened with Syria. Do you remember those days they were removing the Syrian leader, Bashar al-Assad? They were many people, Arab Muslims in the West, they were just so happy that they're removing Assad. What has happened to it? In the aftermath of what has happened in Syria. Look at Libya, the same. These are the same people. It's not just about focusing on a religion. I think it's much larger than that. How they can manipulate these people who are Jewish, Muslims, Christians. And we have to consider that. I totally understand your point. I'm totally with you on that point. We have to be more active in the way that we're fighting. And before, go ahead, before wrapping up,
yes. And look, you are definitely right. Look, the West has manufactured a new Jew. It took 100 years, it took a Holocaust, it took all those wars, and they molded a new Jew. Okay. And the West has been attempting to mold a new Muslim, a new Arab, 400 years also. But the only difference is, till today, there are Syrians carrying arms against the Wahhabi death squads. There are Bahrainis, there's Saudis, or I don't call them Saudis, Arabians from the east part of what is the Saudi kingdom now, that are carrying arms against the Saudi state. There is honorable Sunnis, Shias, Druze, Alawis that are fighting and have given the most valuable things to them, their children, their sons, their husbands, their fathers, and the most honorable person on this earth, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, sacrificed not only to save the oppressed of Palestine, but for the honor of Islam. The honor of Islam, we're still fighting for it. There is no Jewish equivalent currently that is fighting for the honor of Judaism. You see? And I wish, I hope, that some of those Jewish allies that are listening to us now would decide to start a militia, go down to Palestine, go down to Lebanon, fight. I mean, there is Jewish people that carried arms, by the way, in Syria, on the side of the fantasy of Rojava. You know, remember that? The anarchists that came to northeast Syria to aid the Kurds against ISIS, many of them being Jewish leftists. Where are these Jewish leftists to carry arms against Zionists? This is what burns in my heart here. So I'm hoping that all of this anger will instigate Jewish people to take action.
Yeah. We not just Jewish people, Muslim people, Christian people. I think we need a broader picture to deal with what's going on with Zionism. Thank you so much, Leith, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Thank you very much, Nima. See you next week.
See you soon. Bye-bye.